Detroit Beard Collective is a proud sponsor of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Guys, tired of trying to make that burly beard of yours look and smell good? Then check this out. Straight out of the Motor City, where they know a thing or two about being tough, comes Detroit Beard Collective, specializing in making that facial hair look good with products like beard butter, beard oils and soaps, specialty combs, and so much more. Come check out the line today at DetroitBeardCollective.com. DBC takes pride in using Detroit and Michigan-based companies and ingredients in all aspects of their product development and manufacturing as they continue to build Detroit's premier grooming company. Even burly dudes like to look and smell good, and DBC will make that happen. Do yourself and your badass beard a favor and log on to DetroitBeardCollective.com and check out all the amazing products they offer. And when you're ready to check out, use promo code SJPDBC to receive 10% off. Detroit Beard Collective, cleaning this world up one beard at a time.
Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you as time flies. Brad, we're back inside the studio. Seems like it was just yesterday we were in for our last show, but here
and
we are.
Here we are again.
Yeah, ready to go. And
getting into the summer season.
Finally.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe.
You never know around here.
Not quite there yet. Northern Michigan. So.
Yeah. Springtime, it's been a little wet, a little chilly here, but at least no snow.
Exactly.
We'll take it.
So, hey, have you seen, I'm just picking up all this stuff today. The big controversy with MUFON?
I did not hear much about it until Nick Redfern actually made a big post on Facebook, started doing a little bit of research, and from what I can tell, some type of racial slur from one of the heads of MUFON?
Here's what I found doing a little bit of Googling this afternoon.
You Googled?
I Googled.
Did you clean yourself after?
No comment. No, it looks like MUFON. For those of you who aren't aware, MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network. They are kind of the go-to people for UFO sightings and events in the United States, but I guess worldwide as well. And it sounds like, the thing that gets me on this, I'll just say it's the Pennsylvania director of MUFON who posted a racist rant on his Facebook page in regards to the Netflix series Dear White People, which I've never heard of before.
Never even heard of it.
Apparently MUFON did not come on, and everyone was kind of waiting for them to give him the boot or at least make an apology for what he said.
Yeah.
And apparently their statement on it was pretty bland and was a non-apology. So,
and they're catching a lot of flack.
They are. In fact, that's where Nick Redfern said he is no longer having anything to do with the group.
Well, you know, and I've heard in a few other interviews on other shows, too. Yes, we do listen to other shows than our own. A few people actually talking about how it almost seems like MUFON might be losing, not credibility, but there seems to be, it almost sounds like MUFON has gotten too political, if you will, for lack of a better word, too control-y, kind of the infighting that everyone complains about in the paranormal field.
Right.
And it sounds like people are kind of starting to break off from MUFON more and more, and this is just kind of opening the floodgates on it now.
Yeah, it's definitely not helping them at all.
No. So very interesting. That'll be something I definitely want to read up on more. Like you said, literally we just saw this posted on Facebook about 30 minutes before we walked into the studio here. So haven't had much chance to dig much more into it, but there's a little taste on it, and
I'm sure the other side of this will be coming out in the very near future.
Right.
So we'll be watching that. We'll get back to everyone on that on the next episode.
Absolutely. I'm even a little more interested just to see what this Netflix series is about now.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this before, so I don't know. And to be honest, I haven't went through and read the guy's rant yet, but I will look that up later tonight, and we'll see what we can find on this.
In today's politically correct world, someone's feathers are always getting ruffled.
Yeah.
So we shall see. But nonetheless, speaking of stories and sharing stories, we might as well get right into our own as well. Brad, what do you say we do some paranews?
Sounds good. Let's start off with the latest incarnation of Amityville movies. This one, I'm kind of, the more I read on this, I'm looking forward to it. Daniel Farrens, who co-produced the 2009 movie The Haunting in Connecticut, which, it was okay. Nothing really, very few similarities to the actual case, I guess, which it's Hollywood, as we always say. But anyway, Dan is going to direct a new supernatural horror movie based on the Amityville murders this time.
Okay.
So we're getting outside of the Lutz family story here. The Haunting on Long Island, the Amityville murders, will go beyond the story of the Lutz family and the house depicted at the Amityville horror films, where 13 months earlier, one of the strangest and most baffling mass murders of the 20th century occurred, the DeFeo family murders. While the Lutzes escaped the Amityville house with their lives, the DeFeos weren't so lucky. Farrens directs from his own screenplay, with production set to start this summer. So that'll be interesting. I've always thought that was an untapped part of the story.
Yeah.
There are books. I've read books on the DeFeo case. It's very interesting. Ron DeFeo Jr., who committed the murders, says that demons talk to him, this, that, but everything I've read up, it sounds like the guy was a complete drug addict.
Right.
Had major, major issues with heroin. But it was the way the murders occurred. And I don't want to get too far into it if somebody's looking forward to this. But it was odd. Everybody in the family was found in their beds, and I believe face down. And you would think after the gunshot, somebody at least would have gotten up and hid.
You would think.
Or ran,
because
or did something.
It was just an upstairs area. It's not like it was spread out along, in a big area.
Mm-hmm.
So one gunshot, a large gun at that, it was a rifle. So that would have woken someone up, you would think.
Yeah, it appeared everyone was sleeping at the time they were murdered.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of the interesting angle on that case. But, yeah, now after all of these years of Amityville centering around the Lutz family, they're getting back to the meat and potatoes of it and going to do something with the DeFeo family.
I agree with you. Interesting angle on it. I will look forward to that one as well. All right, so my first story here now in Para News: did UFOs cause Marilyn Monroe's death? Well, a new documentary coming out claims they have proof. This is a new documentary that is showing leaked evidence regarding extraterrestrial and their existence, and it's directed by Michael Mazzola. Now, before you hear stuff like this and you think, well, here comes a crackpot with another handheld camcorder. I actually watched part of this today on the segment of Marilyn Monroe, and it's well done. It's well produced, quality looking, and Michael Mazzola, the director, was actually being interviewed at the time, and I don't know. It looks interesting.
It seems like anything that ties into the John F. Kennedy assassination or his presidency, there's so much in the way of controversy and conspiracy theory around all of this.
Right.
And naturally, Marilyn Monroe, there were always the rumors that the two of them were having an affair and that she got too close to him and the CIA took her out.
And this it still plays along those lines of her affair with JFK, but also with Robert as well. And they say that she just basically got in too deep.
Knew too much,
but was starting, there's a document that they found that basically stated Marilyn was calling one of the heads of the government, basically saying, look, Robert and John will not take my calls. I've got information about the government. I've got information about alien lives that are real. And this was right on the time when JFK was really making the push to the moon, and they were afraid that it could really interfere with everything. So according to this documentary, it was actually her knowledge about alien life and UFOs that got her killed.
What was the name of this documentary again, Tim?
It is called Unacknowledged by Michael Mazzola.
Unacknowledged. Yeah. Sounds interesting. I'll have to give that one a watch.
Yeah, part of it was out on YouTube. I didn't look to see if maybe the whole thing is out there, but it is out now. I know they said that. And yeah, so could be worth looking into.
Sounds interesting. Let's for my next story, let's stick to the governments and UFOs, although this one going to the Australian government, as Australia's social services minister has launched an urgent investigation to determine how a UFO group received thousands of dollars in taxpayer funds. Why can't we get this for our ghost groups and our paranormal?
No doubt.
Anyway, Minister Christian Porter described having a beam-me-up Scotty moment when he discovered that his department approved nearly $6,000 Australian of grants for the Toogoora Lake UFO group on the New Wales, South Wales, Central Coast since 2013. I'm sure they're very nice people, and there are lots of volunteers who are getting something out of it, but looking at it from my perspective, representing taxpayers, it didn't seem to pass a common sense test, Mr. Porter told ABC News. I asked the department to hold the transmission of funds until they could give me a little more detail around what the group does. The funding, exposed by National News, was initially provided by the Labor government to assist with the cost of transporting volunteers with disabilities. Asked about the Central Coast reputation as a UFO sightings hotspot and boasting the most apparent UFO sightings in the country, the minister said that you tend to find a lot of sightings when you're funding UFO sighting groups. Well, the department approved funding for the UFO group in the 2017 volunteer grant program, according to official records seen by ABC News. So, yeah, government funding of UFO. Didn't we cover something of, I think it was university funding of a Bigfoot program
expedition
by
a
public university. I think that was in New Mexico a few months back.
Yep.
I'm going to have to look back on that, see how that ended
how
up.
That came.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, think of back in the days of Project Blue Book.
Oh, right.
I mean, that was a fully funded government project.
But it was also ran by the government.
That's true. Very true.
Not by a group out wandering in the field. And yes, getting the sightings because the funding is there.
Look, when you hear some of the ridiculous stuff that they do fund, I'm okay with some paranormal research and some Bigfooties going around looking for stuff on. I'd rather know my tax money's going to that.
Well, I would rather have the tax money stay in my pocket than fund any of this.
Now you're asking to live in the perfect world, and we know that doesn't happen. All right, here we go. Last story of Para News. We're actually going to go more towards the world of the cryptids now, if you will. We're going to have to really keep our eye on Chicago, and not just because the death rate is higher there than any other place in the country, but the fifth now reported flying entity has been spotted in Chicago in the last month.
I've been seeing this, and I saw when the first ones popped up.
Right. And, of course, people start automatically thinking of Mothman.
Right.
And last time he appeared in West Virginia, we know what happened. But now this headline says, father son saw bat out of hell rise from the water. They were by the Little Calumet River in Chicago. This is the actual report. And again, this is the fifth in the last month. It said, this is reported by the father. I was out with my son by the banks of the Little Calumet on the northwestern side of, oh my God, I need glasses, of Hedgewitch Park at a spot where we have had some success catching fish in the past. It's located by the Trestle Bridge that runs east and west over near 130th Street. It's a spot that takes a little effort to get to, but it has had some payoffs in catching some medium-sized catfish. It was about 7:30 p.m., and we were packing up our gear when we heard something that sounded like train brakes when the train's slowing down. The problem was there was no train going by at the moment. When the train goes by, you usually feel it going by. You also hear it. It's pretty loud. On this day, it was quiet when the occasional sound of trucks or cars going by. We heard the sound again and saw something fly out from our left towards some trees on the other side of the river.
So it flew out of the river or out of the trees?
Well, it said it came from their left.
Okay.
We thought it looked like a giant bird, but it was solid black. And within minutes, we heard the sound again, and this thing went straight up and over the Trestle Bridge and headed off down the river. This thing was unlike any bird we have seen in our lives. It was solid black and had been to be about the size of a full-grown man. It had wings that must have been 10 feet from tip to tip. It flew up and out of sight within seconds. We couldn't really get any details as this thing flew literally like a bat out of hell and was still on the other side of the river. We stood there and watched it fly away. It was just, we were just blown away by the incident. So they reported it to the police right away. This actually came off of a police report. So again, whatever this is, it's being spotted in Chicago, 5 in the last month now.
That's pretty significant, yeah. Sighting-wise.
It really is.
You look at the old Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant, and I think there were only 2 or 3 maybe.
Right.
And now you're talking 5 in 1 month.
Yeah. Be so, very interesting to watch.
It will be.
And the fact, too, that, again, near water, near a bridge, which is what happened in Point Pleasant. So
very, very true.
We shall see, Chicago.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
Watch. It worries me enough around here with seagulls flying overhead. what would a... Never mind.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Let's get back to more monsters after the break, though.
You got it, because coming inside the creaking door, the return of Linda Godfrey, good friend of ours, and her latest book, Monsters Among Us. She is one of the leading experts in the field on monsters and everything that goes bump in the night in the woods. Coming your way next, right here on Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Nestled inside historic Old Village in Plymouth, Michigan, sits a beer lover's destination, Liberty Street Brewing Company. Since 2008, Liberty Street Brewing Company has been crafting delicious beer the right way, brewed in small amounts to ensure quality and maintain freshness. The moment you walk in, your experience is their number one concern. Caring staff, updated and changing list of delicious beer, and a short list of regular food are all waiting for you. Once you walk in, you won't want to leave. Or grab a growler of your favorite Liberty Street Brewing Company beer and head home to enjoy the latest episode of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Liberty Brewing Company in Plymouth, Michigan, giving you the freedom to choose a better beer. Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you as we are very excited to have this next guest join us back inside Creaking Door. It's been a while since we've had her to come in, but Brad, she talks about, writes about some of the things that we just love. It brings us back to being children again, and the things that used to just creep us out and get us so scared. It touches that inner child, if you will.
Well, you know what? I can remember growing up, and when we'd run down to the library and get books to check out, there were always a certain section. There were the ghost books, but then mm-hmm. there were also the monster books.
Right.
And it seemed like those kind of went by the wayside for quite a while. And I think one of the reasons we've seen a resurgence in the cryptids and the monster books is Linda's books.
Absolutely. And we're so honored to have her back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Please welcome Linda Godfrey. Linda, welcome back inside Creaking Door.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's so good to have you inside, and we appreciate it. And, you know, Brad actually just brought up a great point there, Linda. It seemed like when we were kids a few years ago, you know, there was a whole section that was dedicated to just monsters and those type of creatures. And then it seemed to kind of go by the wayside for a while. But folks, especially yourself, one of the leading authorities now and authors out there writing and bringing back the legends such as Dogman and Bigfoot and all the other creatures that come along with it. Do you ever look back and say, you know what, let's pat myself on the back a little bit, because there's no doubt you kind of blazed the trail again.
Well, you know, it was really intentional. It wasn't something that I set out to do. It was just more like after the Beast of Bray Road, one thing followed another, and here I am, 25 years later.
It's just amazing how sometimes we envision things going one way, and then before you know it, something just kind of happens, and that's the path we follow. I mean, because you had no intentions. Like you said, you were, correct me if I'm wrong, but a newspaper writer, and you just happened to follow up on a story about the Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin, and that changed your life.
Yeah, it really did. Even though I worked for the newspaper for 10 more years, but during all of that time, people continued to contact me about things they had seen, not just dogmen or wolfmen or what people like to call werewolves, but the Bigfoot, the big giant birds, chupacabras, Batman, you name it. Mm-hmm. And I realized it was such a widespread thing with so, not only so much interest, but people who were still seeing these things, that they really deserved to have books, something permanent out there, so they'd be more than just, you know, and the internet was really growing during those 10 years, too.
Right. That's what really took me back about your books, Linda. The initial ones, The Beast of Bray Road and The Michigan Dogman and Werewolves Among Us, it is the amount of credible people that have contacted you over the years with sightings of dogman or werewolves, because up until this point, I'd heard very little in modern American culture about these creatures being sighted anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I really was totally unaware of it back, you know, in my journalism days. Bigfoot was all the rage. I knew quite a bit about Bigfoot and had followed those things since the 60s, and that was not such a surprise. But to think that people in my own hometown in Little Elkhorn, Wisconsin, were saying that they saw what looked exactly like the Hollywood idea of a werewolf, that was pretty shocking to me. And I thought this was just something that people deserved to know about. And even if it turned out to be no more than a local legend in the making, which it's far beyond that, that it still needed to be recorded. And my own curiosity was another big factor.
Now, do you still hear, are there still reports of a beast or a creature in the Bray Road area?
Yes. Yeah, I was out there just 2 weeks ago following up on a person who saw what looked like a big black shape in the ditch right near his property, and he saw two glaring orangish-colored eyes staring at him, and they were predator eyes, you know, where they're both looking at you on the front of the head, not on the sides. And he got pretty unnerved. He did find some tracks that looked like a couple of different kinds of smaller animals, a lynx perhaps, and coyote. But this thing was huge that he saw. He said it was neither of those items. And it left no footprints.
You know, Brad and I have said this before. We've shared it on the show here before, too. It seems like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, those two kind of are like the big brothers, if you will, of cryptid. They withstood the test of time. But Brad and I are very glad that we did not learn about Dogman until we were into our adult age, because we have both said if we would have known about, for what, there's something about the legend of Dogman that just literally, even as adults, sends chills up our spines. And if we would have known that as kids, I mean, that could have kept us out of the woods. And growing up in northern Michigan, you got to play in the woods, you know? And
yeah.
There's just something about the legend that is very, very creepy.
There is. And it's, I think, because these things resemble our idea of werewolves, which is something that goes back to the earliest civilizations that we know about, wolf-like, man-bodied creatures. And that freaks people out. Also, these things, when people spot them, even if nothing bad happens, and it usually doesn't, in 25 years I've only had one injury where it actually broke the skin and needed medical attention in all that time. So normally they're just running off into the brush. But before they do that, they look people in the eye, or they do something that makes the witness or the observer feel they're not seeing a normal, natural animal, even if they're not glowing or hovering in the air or doing anything supernatural. Something about the way they look at people and behave makes people think these are either really intelligent things or creatures from elsewhere.
You know what? As you're saying that, Linda, the storyline behind Black Eyed Kids just completely came to my mind, that it's not the way they act, it's not what they say so much, it's there's a feeling that the person gets. It's almost like that flight or fight defense mechanism kicks in, that sixth sense, if you will, that people pick up on, and something is telling you this isn't right.
Exactly. And people also will get these mental messages. They'll say, it's not like they were projecting English or human language to me, but they definitely gave me the idea that if they wanted to, they could jump on the hood of my car. Or another one would be, if I told anyone, they would come and get me, you know, things like that.
Right.
And usually people don't tell me that until the rest of the interview is over, and then they go, oh, there's one other thing. You're really going to think I'm crazy with this one. And then they proceed to share that.
Wow. That's one thing that's always creeped me out, too, about this, is it seems there is some type of a telepathic, I guess you would say, link with these creatures that a lot of people seem to report who have had encounters with them.
Right. Which, again, I guess kind of almost takes it to that kind of conversation that's really starting to come into the crypto world now, Linda, which is interdimensional. You're hearing that a lot now come up in the discussion of Bigfoot, Dogman, these creatures that seem to kind of show up and have eyewitnesses. But then when it comes to time to find them or to hunt them or to research them, there's no signs. So interdimensional is really starting to be brought up a lot with these creatures.
Right, and you're right. There's a conversation is a very polite word for it.
Right.
You know, there's some, you know, really pretty down in the mud bawling going on about it. Some people just are very opposed to thinking about it, and others are, you know, kind of taking this as the new gospel about it. And I think it's neither. I think it's somewhere in the middle. There was one reason that I wrote the Monsters Are Among Us book was that. Late with the last couple of years, I've started getting more and more of these reports that are very hard to explain in any other way than that there's something beyond going on beyond our usual senses and our usual knowledge of how the world works, physics as we know it.
Yeah.
Either will be associated with the UFO. They may be, in one case, there was a dog man that had glowing blue fur, and two people saw that, wide awake, sober, middle-aged people. People will feel they're being stalked. They can hear things. They can hear something coming, chasing them through the woods, and then it runs in front of them, and they can feel it, but they can feel the rush of air, too, but there's nothing visible. Things like this. I thought that I was sometimes eating these types of reports out of the rest of them, and I realized, I was maybe projecting my own bias too much in there by starting out and saying, well, this witness is credible and that witness is not credible for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then looked at, and then I tried to sort them out, following up on whether there were solar flares at the time or a full moon or any other type of phenomenon associated with it, unknown light, that kind of thing. And it seemed like more often than you'd expect there was.
Right.
Yeah, because it's interesting. Your previous book, right before American Monsters, or right before Monsters Among Us, American Monsters, you really concentrate on cryptid sightings. And this one, it kind of goes beyond cryptid for Monsters Among Us.
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of people are talking about the new cutting-edge physics. And the fact is that whether or not you believe there's such a thing as portals or other worlds or anything beyond our regular senses, the truth is that physicists today have advanced our mathematical formulas about how the universe works to the point where they now can confirm a lot of the earlier points to these formulas, and they're finding that the formulas predict that there must be other dimensions beside our own, and that there probably are points of intersection between them.
Right, exactly. That's what is so fascinating about this theory. And I think anyone who doesn't keep their minds open to any theory that has some type of substance behind it, you're just closing the door on possibilities, because we've got to remember, we're dealing with the unknown here. We don't have the answers. We're just trying to find it.
Right. And I mean, it's not like people who say, well, I believe in Bigfoot, but not that it could come from anywhere. Probably, you know, 80% of the people in the world would stop them right there with, I believe in Bigfoot. You know, so why say, well, I believe in one impossibility, but not in another?
Right. Exactly.
So going off on that line, Linda, when you were researching for Monsters Among Us, was there any story or sighting that was brought to you that you said, wait a minute, this is just too bizarre to even consider?
Yeah, there were probably a couple of those that are in this book. And one of them, if you read the book, the most people ask me about this. It's the Illinois church lady that turned instantaneously into what looked like a giant werewolf.
Right.
In front of a congregation. And this was really an extraordinary story. And, you know, I took precautions of researching every single thing that they told me. I mean, they had fully described the setting, where it was, all kinds of other facts that were checkable. And nothing, there was absolutely nothing in their story that didn't check out. I met with them and interviewed them face-to-face three different times. Had them tell it over and over, never got any sense that they were making it up. Their two children also saw it, who were elementary and junior high age at the time. It was a few years ago. So it was something that I felt also required them to sign a statement saying that, to the best of their knowledge, the story was factual and true. And then you just have to look at what they saw, and it's still, after a decade, they're still bothered by it every day. That's why they wanted to come forward with it. But they sat, and they were in the front row of church, and there was a woman sitting across from them in an adjacent pew that at the end of the service stood up, kind of cricked her neck a little bit, and then let out this unearthly howl. And as she did that, she instantaneously turned from this just very nondescript, plain kind of 40-ish woman into what looked exactly like a huge howling werewolf.
Wow.
Except that it had goat hooves instead of paws.
Which adds a whole satanic slant to it there.
Yeah, and I think that they had been talking about the Holy Spirit and its opposite in that church service. And the thing was that a lot of people were not able to see it because their view was blocked, and the elders or ushers that were up in the front of the church immediately kind of tackled her and got her down onto a pew. And as soon as that happened, she just transformed back.
From, wow.
And because, you know, there were no clothes. She went from a clothed person to this smoothly furred thing, no button popping, you know, clothing shredding and falling off. It was very unlike what you see in Hollywood movie depictions or fiction, you know, where the clothing is stretching and tearing. There's nothing like that.
Yeah.
It was much smoother. And once she transformed back, she was just kind of shaken, and the ushers quickly took her out of sight of everyone. She was taken somewhere. They never found out where. And there also had always been a video made of the service. And this particular service's video got, quote unquote, lost. They wanted bad to see it. Were never able to find it. The church itself is gone. It is completely gone. But I did confirm that it was there, and that it had a pastor that with the name that he said and all that kind of thing.
So, Linda, let me ask you, how many years now have you said since the first writing of Beast of Bray Road that kind of kicked off this leg of your career? How many years now?
25 years since that original newspaper article.
But then you said 10 years after that, you still continue to do journalism for the paper. Is that right?
Well, for 10 years, yep. Yeah. And then after 10 years, I stopped and kind of went back for a while to teaching art and doing some other things while I did research and began the book.
Okay, so well over a decade, 15 to 20 years, if you will, you've been researching cryptids and strange creatures and when you talk to some people who are into the research of the UFOs, they start to tell you that if you get in too deep to something, weird things start to happen. Of course, the whole traditional Men in Black, you always hear about that. But then you hear about these things about weird phone calls late at night, something being ominous and that they feel like they should maybe back away a little bit. In your many years of researching on the cryptid side, have you ever come across anything like that that you have felt was very strange that was directed towards you?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Really?
You know, it's very reminiscent of when John Keel was investigating Mothman at Point Pleasant, and he was seeing all the men in black.
Right.
And there were hundreds of UFO sightings, and he would get these strange garbled phone calls. And the thing is, it's almost become kind of a joke. I do so many radio shows, and almost every time there's some really weird thing that happens. One time, an entire radio tower went silent. And began talking about the topic. So it's just bizarre how that happened. And about 5 years ago, I actually started having Bigfoot experiences and sightings of my own.
Really?
Not the dog man, which I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I actually have.
Well, and that kind of leads me into my next question. I was going to ask you in the years of research, because that's one thing that I respect about your work is that you don't just take tales and rewrite them. You actually get out there and you meet as many people as you can, interview them face to face, actually go to the locations. And in that research, have you actually seen something? Obviously, you were just alluded to Bigfoot, but have you seen anything else where you're like, you know what? I'm sure we saw whatever the creature was you were researching at the time.
It happened in Michigan when I was there working on an episode, a Monster Quest episode for the Michigan Dogman.
Okay.
And I have a book by that title, The Michigan Dogman, Werewolves, and Other Unknown Upright Creatures. And that it starts that book out, the whole description. And the thing was, we were on this very isolated gravel road, kind of deep in the Manistee National Forest. And it was about 2 a.m. It was 95 degrees. It was getting ready to rain. There was thunderstorm. It was probably close to 100% humidity. So I doubt anybody was running around in a fursuit out there. And we kept seeing these yellow eyes. We kept seeing yellow eyes. And at one point, I heard something like a huge dog shaking itself out in the bushes nearby. Anybody who owns a dog knows what that sounds like.
Oh,
this
yeah.
was like a
yep.
gigantic dog shaking itself out. And then suddenly, we had a spotlight trained at one point on the road, and of course, while the History Channel man was pointing his camera in the opposite direction, something began to run across the road. I heard kind of a gravel noise. I turned around and looked, and just in time to see the spine of something illuminated by that spotlight. Most of it was already out of the spotlight already, but what I saw was gray fur. And we know that it was 7 feet tall because that is how tall whatever it was blocked out a reflective road sign
wow.
path that we were able to measure lately and later. And one of the witnesses who had taken us out there also saw it, happened to be looking at the same spot. And at that point, he just became so fearful we had to leave. I mean, he was like panic attack.
So obviously, then if you measured
it, close to it.
So if you measured it 7 feet, then it must have been, it was bipedal. It was on two legs.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Right. The spine that I saw was vertical.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, you alluded in the past, Linda, that you think there may be a connection between some of these cryptid appearances in sacred Native American areas. Have you done any more research into that?
Yeah, that seems to come up time and again, you know, and I've written several times about my discovery that a certain type of animal effigy mound shape in southern Wisconsin corresponds roughly to places where there are more than one sighting of the dogman or wolfman, whatever you want to call it. I recently discovered something else that's kind of interesting, which is that the northern end of Bray Road, where I'd always realized that it intersected with a couple of roads there. And I went and did some research into settler times and found out that this was the crux, the crossing place of several very ancient Native American trails.
Wow.
And when I went and mapped it out, I saw further that the spokes of these of these trails were could be seen almost as like a wagon wheel with Bray Road, that point of Bray Road at its center. And each of them led to a lake area where these same animal-shaped effigy mounds were prevalent.
And very these were the interesting. Summer places.
So these would have been very sacred areas. And the end of Bray Road was right in the center.
Wow. Big research there. That's huge.
Yeah. That's something I've been chewing on. I just figured that out about a year ago, and I'm still working out details on that. But it's the first solid thing I've found. Mm-hmm. For 25 years, I've been asking, what is so special about Bray Road that we should have all these sightings? And
right.
As I said, we do have sightings still going on. And I felt like I could never hang up my research hat until I found something about it. And this seems like the most significant reason I can come up with, because there is some support in Native lore that the center of such a formation, especially when it's not a man-made formation, but a natural geological geographical formation with the distribution of these areas, would have to be not only sacred, but there is some belief that it would be the center of a portal or spiritual path, door, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Wow.
Whatever you do, keep us updated on that research, because I'm just sitting here right now thinking about this and what you may have stumbled upon right now, Linda. This could be very big.
Well, I think it is to understanding the Bray Road phenomenon.
Right.
I really do.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I can remember, too, there was a sighting or a number of sightings in northern Michigan years back over by Gulliver, in fact, where one of our favorite haunted hotspots,
right.
Sechua Point Lighthouse, is. And there were a number of dogman sightings. I believe this may have been back in the 60s, but the head of the Historical Society there had also told us when they were putting the road in, Tim, I'm sure you remember this story, that they were plowing up.
Yes.
They were plowing up bones left and right.
Right.
They assume that the road ended up going through what was an unknown ancient Native burial ground.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, they would just take the skulls and put them on posts on the side of the road.
Yeah. Yeah, just morbid.
Right. And this was kind of the same area where these sightings had occurred, from my understanding.
Oh, wow. That's very possible. I had a recent sighting a few months ago at a spot about halfway between Tree Lakes and Ontonagon.
Okay.
And I thought it was familiar, and I went and looked, and sure enough, I had an older sighting, totally unknown to the first one, in the same spot. So I have some friends who moved up there, and that's another thing that's on my investigation list this summer. And I'm working on the book, too. So
another book is in the works right now, then.
Right. And I also have a lot of things at my free blog, lindagodfrey.com, that are not in the books that come up, and I just, put them on the blog if I can. So if anybody's interested in seeing some of those things, they can just go to lindagodfrey.com. I don't have ads or anything like that. It's just a place where I put what I can out for people to see.
Yeah, and I do enjoy, I check out those blogs when I can too, Linda, and I do enjoy them. It really is just kind of like an addition, if you will, to your books. Now, is lindagodfrey.com the best place for people to go and get your books? You have a number of them to choose from, or is it more of an Amazon place?
Well, I've got a clickable list of books where they can, just click and it'll take you to an Amazon type of website.
Okay.
But that's on the books and bio section. There's also a question, a beast question page. I try to keep an updated calendar, and you'll see your event coming up on there, of places I'm going to be. And there's also a form that people can write to me on and share your own experience or whatever.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, of course, they can buy your books online, or if they're going to be joining us this summer for the Michigan Paranormal Convention, we are very happy and honored that you're going to be with us again this year, and you always bring a nice selection of your books as well, too, so people can get them here for that event. Now, Linda, have you, we actually were just talking about this in the first segment of the show, the sightings that have been happening in Chicago, five now in the month alone, of this human-sized flying creature. The last article we read didn't really mention Mothman, but that's what they're alluding to. Have you been hearing any of that and following those?
Yes, I have. You know, and I've got in my chapter on flying creatures in American Monsters, there were very similar things reported over Chicago a few years ago. So it's not the first time. This is not an isolated little pocket of incident. It's been happening.
Interesting.
Maybe they're coming out of Lake Michigan. I'm not sure.
Right.
Exactly why Chicago, but there often does seem to be a connection to these Great Lake waters.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So I don't know if that's it or not.
Any other projects, Linda, that you're working on right now that that you can talk about anyway?
Well, people who read Monsters Among Us, and actually you can see something about it and a little short video of this man on my website, too. I've been assisting an area, Bray Road area property owner for about 3 years in trying to investigate strange mutilation deaths and unrecognizable tracks, weird, weird light formations, and other things. And that continues. We have things going on all the time out there, and so that will probably end up in the book or on my blog as well, too.
All right, fantastic. I can't encourage people enough to get out there and pick up Linda's books. They are wonderfully written, and they just really do touch on those things that we've loved since we were kids right up through being an adult.
Yeah, and it's just the amount, as I stated earlier, the amount of people, credible witnesses, coming forward with these stories, it's just blown me away.
Right, exactly. So, Linda, keep up the great work. Stay safe out there, because we look forward to seeing you in August here for the Michigan Paranormal Convention, and thank you so much for coming on Inside the Creaking Door with us.
You're welcome, and I'm looking forward to Sault Ste. Marie.
All right, we're looking forward to it too. LindaGodfrey.com. Check it out, and you will not be disappointed. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more on the way from Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com. Love your horror films, comic books, and TV shows served up with a side of what the f***? Then we have the place for you.
Slackjaw Punks!
Yeah, SlackjawPunks.com. We dare you to check them out. A podcast that focuses on all the new horror films, comic books, and TV shows, and interviews with the authors and directors, but covered only the way the guys from
Slackjaw Punks
can do it. Plus, you can enjoy written commentary on all of the new stuff, too, from a whole slew of staff writers. So stop wasting time and check it out.
Slackjaw Punks!
SlackjawPunks.com. Serving it up with a side of what the f***? Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you. And once again, we want to thank Linda Godfrey joining us via Skype this evening, Brad. And always great to just sit down and catch up with Linda.
She has such amazing stories.
Yeah.
And she's one of those people that is so approachable. And I can understand why people write to her and get a hold of her on this stuff. I mean,
right.
If you've ever met her, she's just the most mellow, laid-back person and just so friendly.
Yeah, she really is. She's the real deal. So hopefully if you're here this summer with us for MI Paracon, you'll get a chance to meet Linda.
Great. Yeah, lady. She'll be doing, she's going to be hanging out doing a special meet and greet and book signing. So
nice.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have her inside the Creaking Door.
Really is. And so thank you for joining us for that interview with Linda. But before we go, Brad, we got to do the segment that we enjoy doing called Mailbag. And this is the opportunity for any of the listeners to reach out to us, and if we choose your message, we like to share them on the show, whether it be a story you want to share with us, like our last episode we had was a wonderful creepy story about a guy that's in his cabin.
Oh, right, the phone.
Yes.
The phone picture,
the
yes.
The picture. So if you didn't hear that one, go back to our last show and check that one out, because that one was downright creepy.
That was one of my favorites.
Yeah, mine too.
Honestly, that anyone has sent in to this point.
Right. So if you want to share a story with us, if you have a question, we've always said if you want to share recipes, Brad and I both like to eat. That's fine. We'll take it. Just find us on Facebook, Creaking Door Paranormal Radio on Facebook. We're the only ones.
And we enjoy a beverage, too. So make sure
yes.
you check out our newest sponsor, Liberty Street Brewing. So that's as soon as I get out of here, I think that's where I'm heading.
I was just going to say, on the way out of here, we got to stop by and pick up another wonderful sixer of
Eagle IPA is turning out to be be my favorite from
my
their
favorite
offerings.
Too. Yeah, exactly. So thanks to Liberty Brewing Company for coming on board and sponsoring us here at Creaking Door and the entire family at slackjawpunks.com. And of course, Detroit Beard Company.
Yeah.
Can't forget about them either. Longtime sponsors of us.
Yep.
Yep.
So. Good guys. Good guys. All so right. Who's the lucky listener tonight?
All right. Well, this one is actually pretty creepy, too. This one kind of goes hand in hand, if you will, on the creepy level of the one we had in the last show. But this one, chain letters. Remember chain letters?
Oh, yes.
Back before internet, they were actual letters.
Right.
You'd get them in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, pass this on to so many people. Well, now it's so easy to do it on the with digital now.
I think that killed it because nobody pays attention to them anymore.
Right. So that's why I want to let Danielle from Rochester, New York, not to get too freaked out about this. Because she's Danielle sent this in to us. And she says, hi, my name is Danielle from Rochester, New York. I'm 14 years old and just recently received this email chain letter. She goes, I usually don't think too much about these, but this one freaked me out for a couple reasons. One, it's a very scary story. Two, the girl in the story is the same age as me. Here's the chain letter, and she shared it with us. And it goes, a 14-year-old girl named Ruth was sitting at home eating tacos while babysitting her little brother. Her parents were out getting drunk. At 9 p.m., she put her brother to bed and fell asleep immediately. She watched TV for a while, and at 1:27 a.m., very specific, the phone rang. She picked it up, and an eerie-sounding voice said something in a foreign language that she could not understand. She just hung up. Later on, at about 3:13 a.m., the phone rang again. The same voice came on the phone and said, check your brother's room. Ruth said, who are you and what's your problem? Then she hung up. She got scared and went to check on her brother just in case. She opened the door and saw her brother hanging from the ceiling, dead. She called the police and they came right over. They did the whole inspection thing and eventually she was arrested and went to court and was found guilty for first-degree murder of her brother, Pelswick Oswald III. She was sentenced to life in prison. This is no joke. It's a true story of a real family in Fork City, Utah. She haunts those who do not retell her story, and she thinks it is them that murdered her dear brother. If you do not send the link to this page to five people in the next 313 minutes, she will appear at your bedside at 3:13 a.m. and hang you, just like it was done to her brother. I repeat, this is not a joke. It's real, and there are consequences for disbelief in the death of Pelswick Oswald III. Send this to your friends with the title, What a Nasty Girl. Start sending it now before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy story, nonetheless.
It is a creepy story, but it's you get into all the creepy pastas and things that get your modern urban legends, these kind of things spring out of or are contrived from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I think back to the whole Slender Man thing.
Right.
And that starting out as a creepy pasta, and now all of the folklore that's surrounding it and the tragic consequences of these girls in Wisconsin that thought they were going to go meet Slender Man and ended up stabbing their friend almost to death. Luckily, the girl pulled through.
Amazing that she did.
I believe those two girls, in fact, go back to court this summer on that. I know they've been locked up since this incident happened. But, yeah, the whole chain letter thing, and I don't know that I've ever read through an entire one, honestly.
Yeah.
For a while, they were so big on the internet, and I think it's kind of getting towards being a thing of the past. Maybe they're out there, and I've just
I haven't seen them in a while. I agree with you. I think maybe the fad is starting to go now, but it's a creepy one. And actually, the fact that they were they gave a full name and a city. When we get off the show here, I'm going to Google that just to see if it's somehow they're trying to tie to an actual event.
Maybe there was an actual murder that you never know.
Exactly.
You never know. And after what point does this get so much attention, so many people talking, that all of a sudden there's speculation of a tulpa or thought form that may have sprung forward, as with Slender Man. There are all kinds of legends now that Slender Man, the creepypasta, got so big, the character's gotten so big, that people are actually reporting seeing this figure.
Mm-hmm. And by doing so, the energy that is released by doing that, if they say if enough people do it, could possibly create the actual Slender Man.
So I hope that eases your...
sorry, Danielle. we didn't mean to take it in that direction.
I hope that helped you sleep better tonight, Danielle.
We promise you, Danielle, if you did not send this on to your friends, you are okay.
Speak for yourself.
Again, these have been going around since Brad and I were kids, which they were chiseling them on stone tablets then, I think. So.
Right.
And I promise I've never... even with the ones I received back then, I think I'd actually have received a couple in my lifetime. Never sent them on. So.
No.
You're all good, Danielle. But thank you for listening. We do appreciate it out in Rochester, New York. And if you want to send in, share a story or send in a question to us for our mailbag segment, you can do so just like Danielle did. Again, you can find us on Facebook, creakingdoorparanormalradio.com, or find us on that other thing they call the World Wide Web with an actual web page. Do people still do web pages these days?
Well, we've still got one at creakingdoorparanormal.com and also on the Twitter.
We do that tweeting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can find our website as well, creakingdoorparanormalradio.com. We are out there, and you can contact us through that as well.
Best way to hit us is probably through the Facebook page. That gets checked daily at least, so yeah.
We probably spend too much time on it.
Oh, I guarantee that. So yeah, message us on Facebook at Creaking Door Paranormal Radio.
Yeah, easiest way for sure. All right, let's wrap up another segment, shall we? I hear a Liberty Beer calling my name.
I hear six of them calling my name.
Yes, sir. Once again, thank you to Linda Godfrey for coming on Inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. On behalf of our engineers, Brad Blair, our co-host, and myself, Tim Ellis, thank you for coming on in. This is Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
The Creaking Door